It's time now for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And on this occasion, we are happy to introduce to you Dr. K.O. Ford St. Hill. She has been here before, and she's here now to help me through another evening of information. And as per the usual, she will have her guests to help her through the evening as well. So without any more delay, let's say a pleasant evening to Dr. K.O. Ford St. Hill. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening, Gregson. Thank you for having me on again.
Always a pleasure.
So today I have with me Dr. June Price Humphrey, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her later on. All right. Good evening, listeners, and a warm welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Now, as you would know, it's a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. And I am, as Bryson told you, Dr. K.O. Ford St. Hill, and it's my pleasure to be your host this evening. We are very much looking forward to engaging and interactive session with you. And we'll take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling us at 434-1790. So that's 434-1790. Or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862, 266-4862, and Gregson will happily feed those to us. So today we're going to talk about behavioral disorders in children, right? Now, this has been the bane of my existence for the last couple of years after Dr. Humphrey has passed on the baton. So she's very well versed in talking about these issues. So Dr. Price Humphrey is a psychiatrist. She now works in private practice. She's a consultant psychiatrist, and she has many years of experience working with what was then called the Child Guidance Clinic, which is now the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Clinic at Psychiatric Hospital. But she runs a private practice, which is a general psychiatric practice dealing with children as well as adults. And she does that like a big long introduction, so I won't say anything much more about that. Welcome, Dr. Price Humphrey.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Good. Thank you so much. Always willing. I love that. So today I said, well, you know, the one thing that Dr. Price Humphrey and I know very well is, amongst other things, but one that we know very, very well would be behavioral disorders when it comes to children. And I thought that this would be very timely considering the amount of reports of violent incidents. So we're not just speaking about violence, but obviously behavior and violence have a relationship. And because of the increased reports of violent behavior, especially among our school children, far less in our society, but we'll talk about adults on another day, I thought that we should talk today about behavioral disorders in children, well, behavior in children, so that persons can, so our listeners can understand and get a clearer idea when somebody, you know, thinks, okay, well, this is a bad behaved child versus, okay, there's something that's actually wrong that needs to be addressed. All right. So the first thing I will ask, Dr. Price Humphrey, would you say that there's anything really called the bad behaved child?
Well, whenever we have a referral for a child who's not behaving well, we always need to look at that child in context, the environment, their academic and social development, parenting, the society in which they were raised. And so we don't start out by saying any child is bad behaved. We look at this child holistically. So right. No, we don't start with that assumption.
Yes.
A child can be diagnosed with anything in the absence of the environment in which he was raised.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So just to remind our listeners, because I know that even just that statement probably got quite a few of you itching. So just remember that you can call us, put your fingers to work. You can call us at 434-1790 or send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. So we get a lot of referrals when people are concerned about, particularly people use the term ADHD. Some people don't even know what that stands for. So if you could just tell us briefly about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and just a few symptoms or signs that they should look out for.
Yeah, so attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is, you know, we break down the name itself. There are those with attention deficit or inattentive symptoms. There are those with hyperactivity. And now we add impulsivity. So they're all on the go and they're impulsive. And then there's a group with a combined presentation where they have both inattention and hyperactive impulsive symptoms. I'll start with the hyperactive impulsive symptoms because that's the one that's easy to see. That's a child that's always on the go, hard, doesn't like to sit still, maybe extremely talkative, interrupts others. So the impulsivity, difficulty waiting his or her turn, speaking out of turn. And that child is easy to detect because that's the one that has, you know, the adults pulling their hair out and going, you need to sit still, be quiet, wait your turn, do this, do that. And so those children get picked up very easily. Because they're impulsive, sometimes they also are under that rubric of quote unquote the bad behaved child. But it's often not that they're trying to be bad behaved. It's that the way they interact with the environment doesn't allow them to wait, to pause. And so whatever comes to their mind is what they do. On the other hand, the purely attention deficit children sometimes get missed. They're the ones who are daydreaming, have a lot of, they lose things easily. They don't complete tasks. They're the ones that persons think they have to, you know, keep reminding and keep them on track. But you would get these reports that they just need to focus more. They often don't easily come into the healthcare setting because the assumption is if this child just tries harder, they will be able to do everything else that other children are doing. But then we have the combined presentation. These are children who have both inattentive and hyperactive impulsive symptoms. And so they're often not doing well because it's hard for them to focus unless it's something they really enjoy, so easily distracted. Whether it's attention deficit or hyperactive impulsive subtype, parents will complain that the child can be quiet and can focus when they are engaged in an activity that they want to do. Importantly, it's almost like an all or nothing. These young persons find it hard to switch one task to another. So they're playing a video game, which is highly engaging, and you can't get off. And the parent, teacher, society gets very frustrated because they're saying, well, you can sit hours doing this particular thing, but you can't do 5 minutes of homework or your household chores or follow an instruction that has more than 2 or 3 steps. And so persons around them get very frustrated. It is necessary for me to say ADHD is not low IQ and it's not learning disability. These young persons can thrive if only, again, they've been given the appropriate assistance, but they may not do well academically or socially because they're either inattentive or impulsive and hyperactive. And so they don't really utilize the information around them in the same way as another child.
All right, so we're going to go to a caller now, and then we're going to get back to some of the other disorders so that we can just give everybody an idea.
Yeah, good evening, Miss Singhill. How are you?
Hello, good evening. How are you doing?
And the host, I called to say that there is not the bad behavior, the way that the child was brought up. You know, if you raise a child from small and you practice it, that you write stuff. I said that these days need, if there are guards at the school, that they need to scan these children, that they weren't going with, that's how we do at the polyclinic, with the big adults. If you go to that with the big guy, do it with the children, carry scissors and all kind of thing. Check these weapons in the early and cut out all of that. But ain't nobody, okay. The child was brought up, we practiced with brand, sometimes they can't get brand. I raised two children and the only brand there know was brand bread.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for agreeing with our point. That...
Yes, thank you
very much.
Thank you kindly. Yes. Doc, before you move on, we've got another call on the line. So do we engage?
Sure, no All problem. Right.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hey, good evening. How are you, Bryson?
Yes, I'm not too bad, my friend. The doctors can hear you, please. Go right ahead.
I guess. No, about parenting and all of that. They say there's no manual on parenting, but they take. And one of the first things that we should do as parents is to recognize, get to know your child. That's the first
thing. I agree.
I have noticed. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. They can hear you.
No, I agree with you.
I have noticed that when we become adults, we just try to dismantle the children. I'm not saying that there should not be discipline. I believe in discipline, not punishment. We try to give them the impression that we were perfect. I think that we should tell the child, I don't want you to walk down certain roads, and I'm doing it because I love you. I said, you always told my children when they were growing up. The day your father sees you do anything that's wrong and don't draw it to your attention or discipline you, you can tell anybody your father don't love or care for you. You see, a lot of parents think that encouraging the children in wrongdoings, that is love. It is not. And this program, we need to have this discussion more often, as often as possible. Now, the caller does not talk about scanners at school. I want to tell the caller, children are not foolish. What children will do is to stash the things outside of the school. That's what they do. And another thing that children does is to test parents, to test you to see how far you would tolerate them. You know, and parents, especially mothers, I know I may get some criticisms about this. When you say no television for a week, let it be no television for a week. Because a child's greatest weapon is to cry. And if you check it, it is that there are different cries for everything. When they're hungry, when they want attention, when they can't do it too late. All those are things that you need to observe. But as I said, you need more programs like this. And the more you have, the better it will be. That's my take on it for now.
All right, sir.
Thank you so much for that, sir.
Thank you. Okay, Doc, we've got another caller.
Okay.
All right.
Let's keep with it.
All right, let's see if we can get them on. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, please. Welcome.
Yeah, may I speak to Eugene?
To Eugene.
Yes.
Are you certain you have the right number, ma'am? You're calling the radio station.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
CNN 434-1790.
434-1790.
Yes.
And you're asking for Eugene?
Yes. I think I have the wrong number.
Yeah, I think so.
I think you do as well, too.
Okay, thank you.
That's no problem, ma'am. You have a good evening.
You have a good evening.
You too, darling. You too.
All right, take care. All right. Before you get back to your guest, Dr. June, I don't know what to... Mm-hmm. I'll just read it as it says. Good evening,
okay.
Good evening, doctors. I have a one-month-old baby, always crying at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then the other entry says, I have a granddaughter, 4 weeks old. The mother smokes, and sometimes the baby acts in a rage. And they were trying to say something else, but I can't understand what they're trying to say. But what is your comment, if any, with regards to those comments? The mother smokes, and sometimes the baby acts in a rage, and the baby is 4 weeks old. Any connection, correlation?
Were both of those from the same person?
Correct.
Okay. They're not going to get into that today. But there is obviously some, there are some effects from maternal smoking or drug use on the infants, but we're not going to get into that quite today. Right, we'll get back to, I will take note of that. We'll get back to that on another program.
Alrighty. Carry on, please.
All right. So, Dr. Price Humphrey, if you could just briefly touch on conduct disorder and oppositional defiant disorder, because I think those are the children, like, as you said, I think a lot of people can identify the hyperactive child. But the child who's breaking rules and that sort of thing that just gets labeled as quote-unquote bad sometimes falls into these categories.
Yes. So oppositional defiant disorder and conduct disorder are under a group of disruptive and impulse control disorders. And this is a pervasive pattern where this young person has poor self-control of their emotions and behaviors, and it's reflected in how they interact with society, right? For oppositional defiant disorder, there's a pattern of being angry or irritable, argumentative, defiant, or vindictive. And importantly, disorders, these are not temporary, these are not transient. These behaviors persist for several months at least in more than one setting. So both, so ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, these all persist in more than one setting. So when we have a young person, back to what we said earlier in terms of assessing the environment, where one set of persons say this child is a gem, and another set of persons say, no, this child is a, you know, does rip up the house. You have to wonder what's happening in one environment versus the other. Yeah. On the other hand, with ADHD, conduct disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, many persons will say they see similar behaviors. Maybe not to the same intensity, but it would not be a situation where the child is perfectly behaved in one setting and disruptive in another. This is a pervasive and repetitive pattern. So the children with oppositional defiant disorder, as I said, can be angry, irritable, lose their temper, touchy or easily annoyed, can be resentful. They can be argumentative, including with authority figures. They don't back down from anything, and can be actively or even passively defiant and to instructions given. They may even deliberately annoy others or blame others for their mistakes and can be vindictive. And again, it's going to be a pattern of more than one setting. Children, on the other hand, with conduct disorder have a pattern of infringing on the rights of others, right? So it's not just defiance that we're talking about. We're talking about a pattern where the basic rights of others are infringed upon, you know, age inappropriate way. So for instance, if you have a little three-year-old who decides that they're going to hit everyone, three-year-olds hit, it doesn't mean it's right. You direct and discipline not by hitting back the child, but by showing pro-social behavior. But developmentally, three-year-olds hit, right? You're not going to give a three-year-old a diagnosis of any oppositional defiant disorder. They're being a three-year-old and you need to be a parent. But if you have a 10-year-old who is being overtly defiant and then it may be engaging in patterns where they're either aggressive to people or animals, they purposefully destroy property, there's deceitfulness and theft, and serious violation of the rules such as staying out at night before age 13. So older teens, again, about mentally may push the boundaries, but you don't usually find an 8 or a 9-year-old or 7-year-old staying out from home without permission, running away from home or truant from school. You have to consider that this conduct disorder does need to be addressed because it's often infringing on the rights of other people. And developmentally, regarding this child's age, whether preteen or teen, is out of keeping with what you would expect for other children in the same developmental stage.
So thank you for that, Dr. Price Humphrey. What, at what point then do you think caregivers, whether it be teachers or parents, grandparents, aunties, godparents, at what point should somebody who is involved in a child's life say, well, you know what, this is a little beyond what I would expect for this 5-year-old or what I would expect for this 15-year-old, because you've quite rightfully said the behaviors that is expected is different for a toddler as opposed to a teenager, as opposed to a primary school age child versus an adult. So at what point should they say, well, you know what, I think that this is a bit more than just you being acting your age, acting like a child?
We're going to use several parameters, one of which is to make sure that the behavior is out of keeping with the normal developmental stage, right? If other children around this age try to pull a fast one, you can think of it in that way. But importantly, if this child's behavior is getting in the way of life, so they're not achieving academically, they're not behaving in a pro-social way, their families are disturbed and disrupted by their behavior, school is disrupted, the society is disrupted, then that's where you have to say, well, okay, this is not just a teenager trying to push the boundaries, or this isn't just a primary school age child trying to get their way. This behavior is out of range for other children of this same age, and this child is this child or the society around them is struggling as a direct consequence of this child's behavior. And although I say that, I continue to reiterate, you can't have a child managed in isolation of its society. If you have a child who comes from a disruptive home where everybody cussing and fighting, and this is normal for that child, even as much as we may say it's conduct disorder, there's no way to correct that unless we correct the whole household's behavior as well. This child comes from a society where everybody, or a community where everybody walks with a weapon. It's very difficult to say to this child, you're out of order. Although other children in the school may not walk with a weapon, everyone in their society walks with a weapon. And so we definitely have to address the societal and family problems of these young people. It's very uncommon, not impossible. I do see them and you see them too, Dr. Fortenhill. But it's very uncommon to have a child come from the most picture-perfect textbook family and just spontaneously have conduct disorder. There's almost always something that can be improved. And the more severe the behavior, the more we have to look into that setting. Sometimes it might be genetic as well. Sometimes you see some behaviors and you wonder about the family. Yes, the family dynamics, but the family genetics as well. Sometimes you see behaviors and we consider that there may be problems in mother's pregnancy, including the mother smoking marijuana, cigarettes, whatever, Fanta, cocaine, or she was ill or depressed, or the child suffered a trauma at birth. So we look at all of those things whenever any child comes through our comes to our attention. But we still need to take into context of the society around them, because the intervention for opposition, defiant, and conduct disorder, both the child and their environment together, not separately. Don't bring the child to Dr. Ford St. Hill and tell her to fix them, please. Barbados.
Thank you so much.
It cannot work, miracle.
No, it does not work. I cannot treat your child in isolation.
No.
And most of the time, issues that, even if they are, you know, biological issues with the child themselves, physical issues with the child themselves, at the end of the day, caregivers still have a huge role to play in management. So thank you so much for that.
They're the ones that have to implement whatever recommendations are given.
Precisely, precisely. Greg, so you said we have a caller on the line?
Yes, let's see. Good evening.
Yes, hi, good evening. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes, please. Go right ahead. They can hear you.
Yes, thank you very much. Good evening, doctors.
Good evening.
No, good evening. Now, I'm wondering, I have three questions. I'm wondering I'm wondering what can happen in terms of the first one, because they lead into one another, they're in sequence. Now, the first question is, are all children, because you know there's research for deployed people, are all children with mental health illnesses related? Is that a logistical thing that you can argue as a hypothesis?
No,
that they're all related.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I understand. Because of course you may have in a situation a family with more than one child who's struggling, but you also have situations where the child is struggling in isolation, and the others are not in the same boat. So no, not all children are related. If you're asking whether the different disorders are related, sometimes there's overlap because whatever the initial insult or trigger was can cause multiple problems along the way.
Well, no, there's research that all people who have blue eyes are related. So I was just wondering if all children with mental health illnesses are related.
No, we can't paint that with the same brush. No.
Right. So going on to my second question. Because if all children with mental health are not related, you would find then that the COVID-19 crisis that we just came out of, the children facing this anomaly also would have different challenges. They're not related, so they will have different challenges. You were mentioning some of them prior.
You still with us?
COVID itself was a major challenge to all societies, not just children, but children are a product of the society they come from. And right. So, yes, our young people were struggling and continue to struggle.
Right, yes. So because they have different challenges based on the anomalies, and anomalies, not something that happens every day, that's what would have been happening.
Right.
Thank you. And my final question. So all children with mental health are not related, and due to the COVID-19 crisis, therefore their illnesses aren't related. So what about a child who comes up in a regular family, but has the difference now with a parental configuration in terms of who is supporting them? Does that parental configuration help with the education of that child based on your diagnosis that you would give them as a doctor? So
you have to give us a little, you have to be a little clearer with that one for us. Sorry, when you say parental configuration.
Right. So, it doesn't matter. But I'm saying, what would more education on mental health, mental illness, mental health, and the whole scholastic area of mental mental health, how would education play a role in helping the doctor because the education has to do it? So I'm just asking, how important is education for a doctor as yourself, Dr. Humphrey, in terms of you diagnosing that child with the illness? Has that child had an education before? That child has an education before you diagnose them. How would that education be important?
This is education about mental health you're speaking about.
Like shows like these.
Oh, okay. So how does that affect us making, if that helps when we're making a diagnosis?
For the child in a state before you go to diagnose them, in the state that they are in today, based on if they would have just come out of the COVID-19 crisis, based on the fact that, you know, they're not related, they're different. They have their own unique, way of thinking, and they just would have been almost triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic, and you're now helping them via education through that. So I wonder how important is prior knowledge to that child before he's diagnosed of the education. of mental health.
Okay, thank you for that. We will address that. Thank you so much for calling. So yes, we can. What we will address is how mental health education can assist, I guess, in terms of recognizing the signs and symptoms, whether the child recognizing within themselves or the caregivers recognizing. So, of course, it would be a benefit to the families, whether the child or the parent or the, yes, or the caregiver. We have another caller.
Good evening to who I call Mr. Esteem. That's a behavior model that you need to have a role model for. That's Gregson Seeley. And good evening.
Good evening.
Calling. What I wanted to say or to look at is responses, timeouts, and role modeling by either siblings or students. Having worked on the behavior mod program with the most difficult students in terms of violent disruptive behavior or behavior disorders between the ages of 11 to 34, I found that one of the easier ways, or what you would call the cheaper way to get things done, was to have the appropriate spacing for each student. So spacing is in a different setting than a home is important. Also, having areas located for different activities, it helps the student to discriminate against inappropriate actions at times, or the sibling. The next thing is the timeout. Timeouts can be used and assessed in different ways. Like, I wanted to find out what was the difference in behavior between the behavior presented early in the classroom and the behavior presented after leaving home for school. And there were several issues that came up. And there was the most difficult one was that the parents themselves never knew how to handle the children. And therefore, there were lots of mirroring reflexes. Like, and also, you have to watch the age limits and as the time go by, how you need to change the approach towards the sibling or the student or the child. These are things that slip by when you're a parent, and if you don't get a hold of them, you'll find yourself always in turmoil with your son or your daughter. There are lots of mirroring reflexes that children display in terms of parents, be it the mother. And these things are exhibited sometimes at the classroom level. However, what I find is that as the people would say, if the children are gainfully employed, whatever that means, that they would not do certain things. But most importantly, you need to look at the level of distraction or what you presume to be the distractible behavior. And it is not easy. It's not easy at all to handle a large group of people within that situation. Then you need to look at the medical side of it, dealing with the medication. Sometimes medication is given to operate one way, and then I don't know what happens in the home, but the medication operates at a different level at the classroom level. So the question is, who is going to be able to manage all these situations? You can't expect the doctor to be at home with you and to be a doctor and to be at home with the doctor's family themselves and all that. You have to find an in-between setting, or the doctors need to find an in-between setting where they can get other people to also assist in dealing with the several operations that are needed to get the person to exhibit what we consider to be appropriate behavior. I don't know what y'all will have to say about those situations.
Well, I would take the last comment first, mm-hmm. and that sounds like mentorship. Yes, we want persons to come into your lives who can assist and themselves don't know what to do. Maybe they were raised in a certain way and don't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah. if we can have others in society that can come alongside troubled families and troubled children to give insight, help, advice, to be mentorship for the child and the family can be invaluable. It's hard to find at times, but if it's a definite, you access it. You also mentioned space. So yes, we have to look at the social circumstances. As I said, family overcrowding, having more people within the house than it can handle, situations where there's not enough resources, whether resources, time, energy from the adults, food, clothing, whenever we have a situation where the family themselves are disadvantaged, whether socially, poverty, unemployment, whatever the case may be, that family and the child needs help. I think there were other things mentioned, but I didn't think that.
Interrupt you so much. But there was one I want to get in before I go. There's one situation that I did not hear being mentioned at all, and that is intimate, inappropriate responses at classroom or at home or wherever. I find that at the school I was involved with, I was in charge of what is considered to be sexual behavior mod in terms of inappropriate responses during class time. However, what I find is that there's a serious lack of intervention within the home when it comes to adolescent and adult people who have attention deficit disorders, whether they're slow, whether they're considered to be special persons in terms of how I label them, whether they are slow learners, when they have mental challenges. I find that you need to reach out and help the parents to help those persons cope with their own sexuality. And you'll be surprised to see what happens in homes, if not shocked. And I guess sometimes that is where a lot of this, the disruptive behavior comes from, in terms of not being able to help the person to understand at which point and at which time is something appropriate and when it is not appropriate. And I guess you can understand that if you be able to observe what type of behavior is being exhibited at a particular point in time. And I'm not going to hide this. Usually people are not willing to face up to these realities when it comes to teenagers, especially when they reach 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 and on, whether it be of male or female. So, I mean, I guess everybody would want to send all the problems back to you all, but you have to be able to educate them to help themselves as well.
All right. Thank you kindly, sir. You have a wonderful evening. As always, thanks for your contribution. Doctor, you can carry on.
Thank you very much for that, Mr. Hope. Always a pleasure. So, Dr. Price Humphrey, following on from the the caregiver recognizes that there is a problem, right? They go to the doctor or a psychologist and they tell them, okay, well, your child has oppositional defiant disorder. So let's do it one at a time. What are some of the tips? Because all of our callers kind of, especially the last caller, kind of touched on it in that I can refer you to all sorts of different treatments and all sorts of different services, but there are things that families need to put in place at home. So what would you say are like just a few tips for caregivers in terms of how they should manage the child at home?
That is a very more detailed than it seems on the surface, because often we need to look at where and how the child is behaving. So we teach parents how to model pro-social behavior. You are frustrated, not your frustration on the child. We want to teach them how to address the child's emotional needs without being either so distant that they are unreachable parents, yeah. So over-expressive and emotional themselves that the child is overwhelmed by the parents' emotions, yeah. Right? So we need to teach persons how to regulate themselves, how to model appropriate behavior in front of the child, how to involve other caregivers, because one of the things mentioned yet is when the child goes to more than one household, and there are different rules in the different households, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to bring in everyone who has some sort of responsibility for this young person and have them all be as much as possible in the same book.
Mm-hmm.
If we on can't even page. Find the same page. Sometimes they're reading from two different books, much less the same page. So let's see if we're there. And if there are family problems that's impacting the child, it's not the child's fault, like mm-hmm. problems between the parent and grandparents, or between the two parents, the mother and father not getting along, the in-laws not getting along, the neighbors, whatever. We want to look at all of those things as it relates to the child's specific behavior. Then once we want to make sure that we show the child alternatives. In our society, previously, before punishing a behavior,
mm-hmm.
punish someone, it only says what not to do. Mm-hmm. We also need to teach the children how to do what we want them to do, to model the behavior we want to see, not just avoid doing this, don't do this, don't do that. If you find that every sentence is don't, replace it with do this, do that. This is what we want. And for those that get frustrated and say, but I said it 1,000 times, okay, say it 1,001.
Again.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Just keep going. Be consistent in what you want this child's behavior to be. But if all you're saying is don't do this, don't do that, run up the steps, the child didn't run up the steps, but ran right back down again. You did not tell them that what you actually wanted the child to do was to walk.
Do not.
Exactly. All you said was don't run. Okay, I'm not going to on one foot either. Okay, I will stand on my head. Don't do that either. It's just so much easier to just say, I would like you to walk.
Yes.
And as silly as an example that may be, that is a reflection of both the big and small things that we want mm-hmm. from our children. So we want to not just punish negative behavior, and punishment, again, I will reiterate, does not mean slapping the child left, right, and center. It can mm-hmm. be removal of privileges, time out, etc. But that is not where we stop. To add the pro-social behavior, we want to add, this is what I do want you to do. We want to give the child support and help them to do the things you want them to do. Because if they weren't engaging that behavior before, don't assume that it's all of a sudden going to come out of the atmosphere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes young people are young for a reason. They're not mature. Exactly. They don't have wisdom of years. We need to teach them, not just expect them to come out into the world already knowing what you want them to know. That's not how parenting and mentorship works. Sometimes we have to be very prescriptive and say A, B, C, not just to say don't do X, Y, and Z.
All right. Let me just interrupt mm-hmm. you here, Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a caller there on the line. I said they didn't have mm-hmm. much credit on the line, on their line. So they just asked me to pass this on to you. They're saying, for your comment, if you so desire, they're saying that the children are suffering from a generational curse. And one of the remedies should be that they should bring back prayer in schools. So what is your comment, read that?
Well, I'm not aware that prayer has been removed from all of our schools. Right. So that's the first thing. But no, we can't comment on generational curses. What we can comment on is that there's behavior that is learned. That
perpetuates. Yes, exactly. That's learned and perpetuated through the generations until someone gets in the way and stands in the breach and goes, okay, we have to change this.
Correct.
All right, sir. So
there was something.
Hope you heard a response. Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Good. There was something that you raised, and one of the callers actually mentioned it as well. About if you know you're taking away the tablet for a week, let it be a week. Mm-hmm. What would you say to caregivers as far as remove the consistency is a word that you use just now, because that is something that I do see quite often where parents will come and I will say, well, you know, if the child does not do the behaviors that you're instructing them to do, then what do you do in turn? Oh, I take away their phone. I ask, well, how long do you take it away for? And do you outline clearly when you take it away that these are the things that must be met? This is what you have to do. This is what I have to see before I give it back to you. And most of the time, most parents don't really have an answer to that one, because they give it back when the child is just getting on their nerves at that point. So they're kind of reinforcing the negative behavior. And then they don't have a criteria for how the child should get back that privilege. So am I wrong with this one? How should that work?
So the penalty has to fit the crime and the stage of life. You take away a device, we'll put aside the argument as to whether or not a five-year-old should have a device. Let's put that aside. Mm-hmm. If you take away a privilege from a five-year-old for a week, when their attention span is not that long, you're essentially over-punishing the situation versus removing privileges from a 15-year-old, which really doesn't make any difference whatsoever, right? So it has to be consistent, but it also has to be appropriate to the child, meaningful to the child, appropriate to their stage of life, and appropriate to the crime itself. But for children, things like timeout and no TV for the evening can be motivating because their attention span is better than a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old, where the situation would be longer. And we get back to, as you said, you need to set parameters, okay? This is what I need to see from you in order to get it back. Or it's away for a defined time. And each time you infringe on rights of others or behaviors, this is what else can occur. This is what else you can do. Yeah?
Yeah.
Sometimes parents take the easy way out and they may give something back, then take it, then give it back, then take it 5 minutes later or a day later. And the poor young person is going, well, I might as well give up because I ain't ever getting that back. I'm never getting back this particular privilege. So we have to be aware that you can't have the same punishment for a minor infraction and a major one. It makes no sense. You will then not be believed, not be trusted. And those will be the situations where parents will then say, well, there's nothing I can do to get this child to behave. Well, this is where we look at the parents' behavior as well and see, why is that? Is it that others have an influence and you're not having it? There may be something there that we can look at as well.
Yes. So that, because we do hear that quite often. I tried everything and this child just does not listen to me. I take it away. They don't care. So I love that point that you brought up, which is, what are the other influences? Is it that you live in a home with five other adults and the child is hearing more because you're at work, is more granny that the child is with when they come home from school, and that's who's setting the rules most of the time, and they're listening more so to what granny says, or is granny intervening when you are actually trying to speak to your child? So we have to look at who the authority figures are, and do you have authority with your child as a parent? So those are very, very good points that you brought up. So, because I know time is getting away from us, do we have resources in Barbados to help caregivers and children manage when they have issues with the behavior? I know that's a loaded question.
I want to give praise to Paradox, who continue to have their weekly program. They're available. We have the churches. We have groups of all nations and faiths. So whether Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, we want our religious leaders to be involved. We want our teachers and our social activists to be involved. Those who have the community groups and places where our young people can go safely. And you, maybe the child's household is disrupted, but they're in a community setting where somebody's saying to them, look, there's a different way to behave. We want, you know, our neighbors who may see something going wrong to have a quiet word with the other adults. Yes. Never undermine a parent's authority in front of the child, but sometimes you do need to have a word with someone and say, look, you could be a different way, right? So there are psychologists privately and publicly, there are counselors, and yes, there's the healthcare, health and doctors and nurses as well, who all have a role to play in shaping the society, which includes our young people.
Yes. I am very, very glad that you brought up that point, Dr. Price Humphrey, about the community involvement that is needed in terms of helping. Literally, I think we have to get back to remembering that it really does take a village to raise a child. And it's not necessarily about the old time days where a neighbor will see a child doing something and the child get lashes from the neighbor and then get lashes from the parent when they get home because the neighbor had to beat them. But it's more so that the community has, because parents and guardians work a lot, neighbors may observe things that parents may not be aware of. And it's not a sense of, you know, telling bad on the child, but you know, you're concerned. Also, the community groups, we had a lot of, you know, disturbance with those programs because of the pandemic, but I really do think it's time for more community activities and more community events, because one of the things that I do commonly see is that, for one, extra activities like after school or even during school, but a lot of children comes at a cost. Yes, you may have, you know, sports and that sort of thing, but for the most part, sports falls in a particular term. You may only do football practice with the team for one term, for the tournament, and then that's it. And what you have are a lot of children who don't have activities, who have very little structured activities to channel all the energy that they have. They don't. So we need more community activities, because some children, some parents cannot afford necessarily to pay for swimming lessons, to pay for music lessons, pay for dancing, these sort of things. And then some of them don't have transportation either. So that child has to catch the bus to and from school. And catching the bus at 6 o'clock may be very, very hard then for this child who now has to go home and do work and that sort of thing. Whereas if they could do an activity that was closer to home, then it would be more likely that we would get a lot more children involved in activities, and that was either free of cost or very minimum cost, just, you know, just a little drop-in fee that parents may be able to afford, or children may be able to save some of their lunch money to pay for the drumming class at the community center once a week, you know? So those are some very, very good, that's a very good point that you brought up there. Are there any closing tips that you would like to give, or just important points that you would like to leave parents and caregivers with as it regards to behavior and children?
Yeah, I would like to say that just because you a certain way doesn't mean it's the way that is the best for your child, or the circumstances that you found yourself in now. The world has changed, and we're not talking about letting children run free for all. The role of parenting is to guide and direct, okay? But just because you grew up being beaten black and blue does not mean that's what works now, or that's what works ever. Because even those who did have that sort of harsh parenting, they look back and say, well, you know, sometimes it really wasn't necessary. So just because, as you know, that is how, what you know, doesn't mean that's all there is. There are others who were raised in very permissive households, or maybe were no rules, and you liberated, but you need more structure. There may be situations where you are trying to guide your child and really needs a different type or a different direction. You're trying to push your child to be the best athlete out, and the poor child has two left feet and really wants to do art or business or whatever the case may be. And so just because this is all you know doesn't mean that this is all there is to be known about parenting. So if your interaction with your young person is a struggle, by all means, get some additional advice on how maybe you can tweak things, do things differently, do things better, have someone else involved, have someone else give you backup, so that we can have a, you know, another generation of young persons who are not wayward, but who've had the best opportunities that you could provide.
Thank you so much for that. And that is very, very, very good advice. So I am sure that our listeners are going to take some of this, if not all of it, to heart. So just to recap for some of our listeners who may have joined later on in the program, today, this evening, we had Dr. Price Humphrey, who is a consultant psychiatrist, and we were discussing childhood behavioral issues. Let me leave it at issues. And we did touch on ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, as well as conduct disorder and oppositional defiant disorder. And we have a caller who's sneaking in at the end.
Yeah.
So there, let's hear.
I'm trying to make her happy. Good evening. They can hear you.
No problem.
Hi, good evening.
Yes, go ahead,
good
please.
Evening.
Just calling to ask a question, please. What about if you have a challenged child that is autistic/Tourette syndrome but have episodes, but still you have medication, but you still need help with that child? What should you do?
Okay, so I'll take that one. One, we are going to have another program where we actually touch on autism and other developmental disorders, so you can listen out for that one. But as it regards to children who have special needs, that's definitely a conversation that you need to have with your child's doctor, as well as the school and all the other caregivers involved. So in a case like this, it requires input from multiple sources to find the best balance and the best management for the child.
My life is only my one. I try my best.
So no, you have. All right, we're going to talk. I'm going to touch on that before I close. In closing, I'm going to talk about that. All right. Thank you for calling.
No problem. Have a good evening.
Thank you, ma'am. You too. All right. There you go, Doc.
So I will close by mentioning again some of the resources, and Dr. Price Humphrey did speak about this, which is that you have other parents that you can lean on. You have friends that you can lean on and for advice. Communicating with the teachers or the instructors in activities is actually very important, because we tend to drop off children at school or drop them off at activities, but not really take a lot of time to get some feedback from the persons, because they spend quite a bit of time with your child, and they may be able, because you may recognize, okay, well, this child doesn't give their teacher as much trouble as they give me. So what is the reason? So you speak to the teacher about some of the things. Yes, your home is different from a classroom, but speak to the teacher about some of the things. That's what they've been trained in, this. Some of the things that you can implement at home, modify for home in order to get similar results. And then speak to the counselors there are counselors at the schools, there are counselors within the Ministry of Education that can also assist you with this. And then Paradox is a resource that I don't think parents use enough. And Paradox does, they do classes for parents. And then you as a parent may very well need to have counseling for yourself, because especially in younger children, there are a lot of the management when it comes to a younger child is really about us empowering and teaching the parent how to manage the child, because young children can only understand so much, right? And then there's the doctors, whether it is the doctor at your polyclinic or your pediatrician that you take your child to, and then there's the juvenile liaison team. On the other spectrum, the probation department actually assists as well, but that's usually after the child gets in a little bit of trouble. But juvenile liaison scheme, those officers, a lot of them are trained in counseling and psychology as well, and they can actually assist you as a parent as well as the child in terms of the behaviors that you're concerned about. And then, of course, if you are not sure, you can find a private or public psychologist. Just know that there are ways that you can get help. If you have a child then with special needs, then that is definitely a conversation you need to have with the medical providers that are involved in your child's care, because a medical relationship is just that. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way street between patient and doctor or nurse. So if you don't tell us, we don't have the feedback, then we can't help you. So as long as you an advocate on behalf of your child, that is something that I stress to caregivers. You have to advocate for your child. So you're the one who's with them most of the time. You have to advocate on their behalf because they can't always explain. All right. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Dr. Price Humphrey for joining us today. And thank you for having us, Gregson.
Pleasure is always mine. We want to say a big thank you to you two as well, the host of the program, Dr. K.O. St. Hill, Ford St. Hill. They're both double barrel
names. That's okay.
K.O. Ford St. Hill and Dr. June Price
Humphrey. Yes.
God, I thought I had it wrong there for a second. Anyhow.
No, you had it right.
Right. Thanks to both of you. God's willing, we'll come around again next weekend for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And will you be here, Dr. Ford St. Hill, or will it be someone else?
For right now, It's supposed to be someone else. But I'll be right around the corner.
Well, good to see you again. Until we meet again, you take care. And Dr. Price Humphrey, you as well. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.